You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Samuel Adams, Brewing the American Dream. Hear stories from their inspiring entrepreneurs on Let's Talk About Food, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. Well, welcome to Pizza Quest, and welcome back. And today, I have a very special guest joining us from, I assume you're in Ann Arbor, Michigan, right?
I believe that I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yes.
The home of many things, but for our purposes, the most important thing that it's home of is Zingerman's and Zingerman's Bakehouse. And we're with Amy Emberling, who is the managing partner of Zingerman's and one of the founding, you're really one of the founders of the Bakehouse, aren't you?
Well, not really. I mean, I was here right at the beginning in 1992, but I was an hourly employee, and Frank Carollo, who happily retired a year and a half ago, he really started the bakery. But I was here at the beginning, so
you were there at the beginning, and by hanging in there, you're now you kind of like your yeast have risen to the top there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I can't believe it. I was 26, 30 years ago. I did not think I would still be here, but you never know.
Maybe one of the reasons, one of the occasions for us having this conversation is it's like the 30th anniversary of Zingerman's Bakehouse. And
yes,
that's amazing. So for there are probably very few people watching who don't know about Zingerman's, but for the sake of those who don't, and by the way, I see that you're standing in the bakehouse itself with lots of breads behind you, but there are people that are listening to this podcast on the audio version, not the visual, so they're not going to have the benefit of seeing everything that we're seeing while we're watching you. So every once in a while, I'll kind of describe what those of us who are on the video side are seeing. But Amy, tell us a little bit first about, Zingerman's Bakehouse and maybe just that whole story and then your story. We want to hear about, how you kind of ended up finding this 30 years ago and finding, in a sense, your path in life.
Sure. Happy to, Peter. And thanks so much for having me. So I want to tell the sort of story of Zingerman's, because Zingerman's Bakehouse is actually the second Zingerman's business. The first Zingerman's business was Zingerman's Delicatessen, and it started in 1982, and it was founded by Paul Saginaw and Ari Weinzweig. So the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of Zingerman's Deli was on March 15th of this year.
Amazing.
Right. So Paul and Ari started the deli. They both have Jewish heritage. They had this vision of making, classic deli sandwiches that were so juicy that the juice would run down your arm as you were eating it. And they bought bread from a local bakery in a suburb of Detroit called Oak Park. Mm-hmm. And when they were 10 years into the deli, they were trying to figure out what do they want to do next. And a lot of people said, you should franchise, you should open up delis all over the place. And we have the good fortune that we are, we're in the same town as University of Michigan. So a lot of people leave town and then they say, will you please open up where they live now in Arkansas or Missouri, wherever it happens to be. So anyway, Paul and Ari, though, they are very unique and visionary people, and they decided to create what they call Zingerman's Community of Businesses. Mm. And that was to give opportunity to local people who had a passion about a particular food to open up a food business that would be in Ann Arbor, that would have a managing partner that's really an owner in the business. Usually the artisan themselves would be the owner. And the businesses were supposed to have some synergy. So bread made a lot of sense because at that time, 60% of all the transactions at the delicatessen included bread. So that's when the founder of the bakehouse and my original partner, Frank Carollo, decided that they would open up a bakery. And so in 1992, that's when Zingerman's Bakehouse started.
So the bakery came along, and were you able to, Well, first of all, as you said, when you started, you were just working the line. You weren't, you know, really running the show. So were you an experienced baker at that time, or did you learn on the job?
I had baked in a restaurant, and I had gone to cooking school for 7 months, and that was in 1991. And where I went, all that you did in baking was, you know, sort of yeasted things was about 2 days. But I had baked bread in a restaurant. So I had some sense of it. And I had baked, I had made desserts. I was more of a pastry person. But no, I learned a tremendous, I learned here and then subsequently taking classes. But, you know, when I came, when I found out that the bakery was opening, I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. But I'd never really had an incredible passion about bread. But thinking about talking to you today, I thought about, you know, how did I feel back then? And I realized that it really was gripping, because although on the surface people might think, oh, it's the, you know, it's just these four ingredients, you do the same thing over and over again, it's just different proof times, different proportions, I realized very early on that it was just incredibly fascinating, and that you could just go deeper and deeper and deeper and learn more every day. So That sounds familiar.
That part of the story sounds very familiar, because it's this never-ending rabbit hole of learning.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. And I'm sure that is not a unique story. I know it's about your part of your story, I imagine. And I'm sure most bakers, artisan bakers, have a very similar story.
But the timing was amazing. That the timing of the creation of the bakery, because it coincided with the emergence of the artisan baking renaissance in this country, for sure, and really globally. So you guys were right at the, you know, sort of on the doorstep of that explosion of artisanship and baking that, you know, and were part of the contribution of, I don't know, the growing passion for bread.
Absolutely. But it wasn't by accident, Peter. So Ari Wineswide, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, he was traveling all over the country. And he had, as the story goes, because I wasn't there, he had been in San Francisco for about 2 weeks. Mm. And he came back to town, and Frank met with him. Frank was leaving some position a business that he had owned. And he said, hey, Ari, they were friends. I'm about to go work at this other place that I won't bore anyone with the name. But, you know, if you ever want to do anything together, let me know. And Ari said, you know, I was just in San Francisco, and I ate bread from, you know, may have been as many as 10 different great bakeries. And I can't get the people here to even try to make it. How about we open up a bakery together? So Ari was out there and tasting. And that's one of the things that Zingerman's is known for, is doing research, finding things. I mean, it's a lot easier today than it was then. And so that's one of the reasons we also started.
Well, that's exactly when I had my bakery in the San Francisco Bay Area as well. I wonder if mine was one of the 10 breads that he tasted. That would kind of close the loop for me if that was true.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I will ask Ari
if when he was out there, if he tried Brother Juniper's bread. We weren't doing crusty hearth breads. We were doing soft sandwich bread, but inventive, creative breads. It was part of what I call the neo-traditional side of the bread boom, because I didn't want to compete up against all the sourdough companies in San Francisco, because there were so many of them already, and then Acme was just coming on, so some of these other you know, great bakeries, Semi Freddy's, Acme, you name it. So I wanted to have my own niche that was unique. Grace Baking, San Francisco really was the epicenter, I think, of the American artisan baking movement, or the bread movement anyway. But it took off, and I know that I'm sure that in Ann Arbor at that time, there probably weren't too many artisan community bakeries.
There wasn't a single, there had been one, but it had closed. Uh-huh. And then as Frank told me, you know, he thought maybe we'll have a year and a half before someone else opens up. But it was at least a decade before anyone at even nearby opened up. So now there are more, and it's great. And actually, since the pandemic, there are many more sort of people doing it on a micro level. And people ask me, is that a problem? No, I think it's a great thing. The more people who eat this kind of bread, the better. Everybody's, you know, then you have more people out in the community educating people about why it's great.
That's right.
So I'm happy. The more, the merrier.
Well, you guys, in addition to creating the bakery and growing, you know, the various types of breads that you were doing, are also instrumental in helping other people learn how to bake bread, weren't you? Don't you do classes and things like that?
Yes, right. So 15 years ago, we decided, you know, it was sort of a funny story. We leased some space and put it under our lease for another Zingerman's business to move into. And that business, they changed their mind.
Oh.
So all of a sudden, they were very kind. They paid rent for 6 months.
Gave you a running start.
Yeah. Yes. And so we had 3,500 square feet that we thought, what are we going to do with this now? And, you know, Zingerman's is really into educating ourselves, educating the community. And so we thought, why don't we build a classroom and really teach people what we know? And so that's what we did. And so that was 15 years ago. We now have two classrooms plus a lot of virtual classes. And it's really been one of the biggest joys of the bakery, being able to share with people.
So the classes continue on now and into the future. If somebody's interested in coming out for a class, how do they find out about it?
Just go online to bakewithzing.com. It sounds.
Yeah, because you guys get to play with that Zing thing a lot. You got Zing Train, you got Bake with Zing.
Yeah.
But Zing.
Yeah, it's maybe a little overused. But
where did that name come from, Zingerman's? Is that who was Zingerman?
No one was Zingerman. So it was Ari. So the founders didn't have great last names. I'm going to move because I've been holding this in my arm the whole time.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry.
No. And although I love
the fact that as you're moving through the bakery, I love seeing the activity behind you and all that equipment. I can almost smell the breads.
Right. Now we can watch while I'm on. We're near the end of the day here, so it's not that much activity. So Ari Weinzweig was one founder. Weinzweig, not a good name for a business. Nobody can say it. Nobody can spell it. The other founder, Paul Saginaw. Saginaw, there's a city in Michigan named Saginaw.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
might have been confusing to people. And it also doesn't sound particularly Jewish. And it was supposed to be a Jewish deli. So they were actually going to name it Greenberg's. But I don't know if it was. It was soon before they opened. They got a call from someone in Detroit who said, "Look, I already have that name. I already have this sign made. Please don't choose it." So Paul said,
"Yeah, there's a famous Greenberg's Bakery, I think, in New York too. I mean, you would have gotten a lot of lawsuits probably."
Yes, intellectual property. It's sort of an annoying thing.
Nobody owns Zingerman's, right? You get it with the name.
No.
Yeah.
Right. So they made it up, and Paul's grandfather told him. This was in the time of phone books. Choose an A name or a Z name. So it's easy for people.
That's
so
brilliant.
They thought Zingerman sounded kind of Jewish, but it was energetic. And that's what happened.
Well, I know as Zingerman's, you know, fame and reputation grew in the 80s and 90s, you know, one of the things that people associated with Zingerman's would hear about it is these guys are such brilliant marketing people. You know, I've never tasted their pastrami on rye, which I hear is legendary, but at the same time, it's such a cool place. Just the name alone, you know, all these sort of brilliant marketing ideas just seem to be flowing out of, you know, out of the founders and the team that was running it. I met Ari back in the 90s at a conference, and he was doing a presentation on, you know, how he was sourced out. I think at the time he was introducing some bacon or something like that. And people were going, "What do you mean bacon at Zingerman's?" You know, but, I mean, but that's the point, is that he was just, he was carving his own path, and it was pretty cool.
Yes, and he continues to do that. Absolutely. Yeah, but one thing I want to say, Peter, that's really important to me, that is that all of these things that you see, they're coming from everybody's heart and personal creativity. There's no, it's not, you know, when people talk about they came up with this concept for this restaurant, and that's okay. That's a very successful form of business. But nothing here was created by a PR firm or a bunch of strategists. It's really people's heart and soul.
Yeah. And it all kind of grew organically, so to speak.
Yes. Yes.
And so when we come back in part two, I want to hear more about that Zingerman's vision, you know, and philosophy of business, because because that's marketable as well. A lot of people, I think you've, if I'm not mistaken, you've offered seminars and courses on that, the vision behind Zingerman's, and that's in its own right, a very valuable tool for people to hear about. So, and then we, of course, also want to hear, maybe before we go to break, maybe could you show us a little bit of what the product, some of the products that you're making there today are?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually going to take us into our sorting room. And we can see we have a lot of breads that were made during the day today. So right behind me.
A nice rack of bread behind you with, I see hearth loaves there, some with seeds on top.
That is, you know, what I think we've probably seen in a lot of different bakeries, 8-grain, 3-seed. You know, it was from a particular time, but lots of customers still like it. That's one of the challenges, Peter, is that even though we may want to evolve things, we first don't always want to evolve things.
Right.
Right there, we have some what we call better than San Francisco sourdough, because we got into a little bit of an intellectual property disagreement with a company in San Francisco. And Paul, who's very funny, said, how about if I call it better than San Francisco sourdough? And they said, that's fine. So that's what we call it.
So you put another word in front of sourdough and you can call it your own. Well, that's interesting because, you know, people used to really associate sourdough bread with San Francisco. But now, because lo and behold, we found out you can make sourdough bread really anywhere. So everybody's got into sourdough now, but San Francisco still, you know, claims sort of being the forefather of it all. What's that loaf you were just holding in your hand? It looks like
I want to show you a better one of it. So this is what we call True North. And why I wanted to show you that one is because we're really making, I mean, we've made an effort right from the beginning of buying local grain and from small millers. At the beginning, when we opened way back in 92, there was a mill in Ann Arbor called the Daily Grind. And they got some of the grain that was grown locally in and milled it. Some of it obviously came from different parts of the country. But this grain, this bread was created with Michigan grain that was milled by someone in the Leelanau Peninsula originally. Now, he didn't make it. It's a difficult thing that we're all trying to do, right? Yes. And so right now we've been buying from Janie's Mill, which I'm sure you've probably heard about in Southern Illinois. Have you heard of Janie's?
Yes. I've heard of it, but I don't know those folks, but I know that they're part of like a, you know, kind of a growing coalition of regional mills that, you know, are sourcing locally, milling and in small batches and specialty batches. And it's one of the, I'd say one of the exciting aspects of what's happened in the artisan bread and baking movement.
Yes, recently. Okay, I got to find you some Jewish rye because Zingerman's Bakehouse had to make Jewish rye right from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had to. So here's a nice loaf.
Classic looking rye bread.
Yeah, classic looking rye bread.
I guess you couldn't call it New York rye bread, or somebody from New York would get mad. You have to call it better than New York rye bread.
But you know that the New Yorkers wouldn't have put up with that. The San Francisco was they were a little more chill. Okay, you can call it better than San Francisco, but the New Yorkers, they would have fought.
So. Exactly. So we're just about ready to go to break. So just tell me about that rye bread, because again, that's maybe one of the signature products of Zingerman's. What makes
Happy
it?
To.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, like how much rye flour, what percentage of rye flour is in there? The big question is it made with caraway seeds or without caraway seeds?
Yes. Okay. I can't tell you the percentage of rye flour. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I will tell you it's not enormous, because this rye bread is based on the rye bread that was made at the turn of the 19th to 20th century in the Lower East Side of New York. And they were already using a lot of white flour. So the rye flour that's in it, we actually mill it ourselves. Here's one of our mills.
Oh, I see your mill.
So the rye flour is in the sour. So we make a rye sour. And the other ingredient that I think is kind of unique to the bread of that time is what we refer to in the bakery as old. So I see this bucket here. It's a bucket of rye bread.
A bucket of, you mean like baked rye bread that are going into a bucket that's what, going to be soaked and ground up?
Exactly, exactly. Oh, so we bake rye bread every day so that we can take it, slice it, add water to it, make a little mush and call it old. And then it's one of the ingredients in the rye.
That's like a classic German technique, is to put soaked bread back into the dough. And and I know some of the people who are watching it, you know that, but not everybody. Very few bakers know about that trick. And I'm glad to hear that you make it with a sourdough starter. Is it kind of a combination of sourdough and yeast, or just all sourdough?
No, it's a rye sour that and then some commercial yeast. Definitely. Added to the
dough, yeah, which is, again, it sounds like it's essentially really a tribute to the East Coast New York style rye breads, which are very light in area. They're not heavy, dense rye breads that are more common in Germany and are starting to get maybe more popular in the United States as people are falling in love with rye in the old school, old world style. But this is New York style, really. And it's probably, in my experience, maybe 20 to 25% rye and 75%, you know, white flour, wheat flour.
Yes.
Because
people
really don't, as much as they want to say they love rye bread, what they really like is all the cool stuff that goes on rye bread. And they want that bread to be soft and creamy tasting, you know?
Yes, exactly. And so I think what I was told was that this bread is based on what the Polish Jewish bakers of the Lower East Side were making, that, you know, there were differences depending on where people came from.
Yes.
And we actually learned this bread. Do you know Michael London?
Yes, sure. Michael London from upstate New York.
Right. So Michael was like our mentor. That's a long story that we can go into if you want to. But Michael taught us how to make this bread. And Michael, the way Michael talks about most bread that's like this, he'd say, it's like they take a handful of rye and they wave it over the top of the bread. Michael is a hilarious guy.
That's a great story. Yeah. Well, Michael, again, very important baker in the early stages of this bread renaissance in America.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Well, that's a great little sneak preview and taste of the bake shop. Why don't we take a short break? We'll come back in part two, hear more about the Zingerman's philosophy. I want to hear more about what you do as the managing, you know, partner of the bakehouse. And also I want to hear about some of the signature products that you help create and get on the menu at Zingerman's. Old school apple pie. There's certain products that, you know, were your creations. I want to hear a little bit about that as well. So why don't we come back? We'll take a short break now. Those of you who are watching, we're with Amy Emberling of Zingerman's Bakehouse. We'll be back in part two in just a second.
I'm Louisa Kasdan, host of Let's Talk About Food. I recently hosted an exciting live podcast event in Boston and interviewed incredible women entrepreneurs who have received small business coaching from the Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream program.
When I was applying to law school and I got in, I said, you know what? I'm still young. Let me pivot and go into the food industry and really follow my passion.
I was kind of scared. It was a new thing to me. It was like, hey, I don't want me in the newspaper. I just want to be in my room in my house. So that was when I'm like, okay, now that I'm in the local newspaper, I better not disappoint the people that, you know, that have this belief in me.
And on the days that you're tired or you feel defeated, just keep going. And 10 people might tell you no, but that doesn't mean that's your end result. You just have to keep going.
Hear their stories on Let's Talk About Food, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again to Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream for supporting this episode.
We're back on Pizza Quest with Amy Emberling of Zingerman's Bakehouse in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I would wish I could take a live poll right now of the people who are listening, how many of you have actually been to Zingerman's. I have not been to Ann Arbor regrettably, since like 1970, 71 was my last time. There was no Zingermans there. There was nobody named Zingerman then, of course. And so I never got to experience Zingerman's, but I've experienced it vicariously through products that have been sent to me and by going to workshops where Ari and other people from Zingerman's were talking and showing us the things. But I've always wanted to go there. And it's funny because you think, you know, yeah, I don't have a whole lot of reason to go to Ann Arbor, except that would be the reason to go, you know. And that's an amazing accomplishment in itself to have created something that is a destination site for foodies of, you know, of all types.
We would love if you came, Peter. We'd show you a good time.
I would love to come. Maybe participate in one of your classes or something sometime.
Yeah.
That could be maybe. That could be the reason. We'll make it happen. But thank you. In part one, you were telling us, Amy, not only about some of the breads and the stories, and you were showing us that rye bread, that sort of New York style rye bread, and also the better than San Francisco sourdough bread, and all the types of breads that you're doing. But you do other products besides breads as well. And if I'm not mistaken, you had a hand in developing some of those products from the beginning.
Yes, yes. We also have a pastry kitchen, and we also do decorated cakes. And we have a little kitchen that makes soups and different sandwiches and things for our retail shop.
Before you go into all those products, how much of the product that you make is actually used in Zingerman's at your own shops, and how much of it kind of goes out to accounts and clients, either in the area or even around the country, a mail order or whatever?
Yeah. So I would say that 45% of the bread that we bake is used or sold to a Zingerman's business. The rest is to wholesale customers, restaurants, grocery stores.
That makes you one of the major bread suppliers in the whole area.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Of a particular style, not, you know, soft. And there's a bakery, Michigan Bread, that's doing a lot of rolls and things. So, you know, it's kind of nice. People have their specialties.
Do you do fancy breads like chocolate babka and things like that?
We do. So we make a chocolate babka, and we're about to introduce this September. No one knows about it. So you have the scoop, Peter.
We're breaking the story right here.
It's called Eve's Apple Babka, Sweet Temptation from the Garden of Ann Arbor.
It sounds awesome, but I'm guessing it's going to be like an apple pie filling with streusel topping.
Yes, roasted apples. It's quite It's quite delicious. Walnuts, you know, we're making it particularly for the for Rosh Hashanah and the Jewish New Year. So we'll sell it only in September. And
that's great. Well, babka is kind of in its own renaissance phase right now. People are obsessed with babka.
Don't you find that funny?
Well, it seems like if you want to know what's going to be big, then you want to look back 60, 80 years, what was big back then, and then make a prediction that it's going to come back, because certain things just, you know, are so good that they need to come back.
Yeah. I just thought when it really started making a big splash about 5 years ago, and mainly bakers younger than me, I thought, wow, this is kind of funny. Like, big deal, babka. But you know what? It was new to them. And so there was a lot of excitement. And that was great. And they've brought it to another level and reinvigorated people's interest in it. So it's good. At the beginning, I was a little...
I know, but you know, people love coffee cake. And so babka really is just glorified coffee cake with a great backstory.
Absolutely. Yes.
And speaking of coffee cake, didn't you created something, I think, called gingerbread... Was it gingerbread coffee cake?
Yes. We make it every year from sort of, I'd say, December through February. And it started because my husband loves gingerbread, and it was one of the sort of family things that we would do on a, you know, Michigan gets kind of cold winter Sunday. How about some gingerbread and whipped cream? And then I thought, well, why don't we do it at the bakery? You know, I'm sure he's not the only one who loves gingerbread. So that was the beginning. But what we try to do here, and it's with the help, you know, it's nothing. The main point I want to make about product development at Zingerman's, which, I mean, you would know better than I how it works in a lot of other places, but it's not about an individual here. It's usually someone has an idea, and then someone, you know, might be them, might be someone else who takes the first stab at it. And then everybody starts talking about it and saying, well, what should we do next? And so no one here really takes credit for a particular thing. Maybe you could take credit for saying, yeah, we should do this, mm-hmm. but it's really a group effort. So mm-hmm. I'm a little, you know, we're pretty, we're very collaborative and maybe a little hippie. And so.
But you have, right in the name of your expanded operation, the Zingerman community of businesses, yeah. community is a key word for the Zingerman's brand.
Yes, absolutely. And being in the community, caring about the community, trying to make a good community in the workplace is all like a huge part of our culture. So food is first, but you know, community service is right up there.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the Zingerman's community of businesses, because the Bakehouse was it the first of the sort of constellation of businesses. We spoke in a recent episode with Jihai Kim, who has a restaurant within the community, right? What would you call it? A reinvented Korean style restaurant.
Right. I mean, it's really traditional Korean food and dishes that you don't see in many. I mean, there are now Korean restaurants in some of the major American cities that are serving more traditional food, but that's exactly what Jihai does. I mean, a lot of dishes, there are regional dishes all over South Korea that she's featuring. So Zingerman's is, you know, we say that we have three bottom lines. I mean, we do. We have three bottom lines. It's not lip service. They're great food, great service, and then great finance. I will tell you that when I first, so I was here from 92 to 96 at the bakery, and then I left town for 4 years. My husband was a graduate student, and he had finished his PhD at Michigan, and so we left, and I thought I would never be back. 4 years later, they needed another partner at the bakery, and they said, why don't you come back? And so we chose to come back. Why did I get off on that? That was a good one. And so when I returned here, this is the connection. Yeah. I had gone to business school. And when I returned, it was very clear to me that like profit was almost a dirty word at Zingerman's. So when we say, and I couldn't believe it, like, come on guys. I mean, I grew up in a family business. I had just gone to business school. It's like, it's okay to make money it's okay to make money. But that generally I would say that we care about service and food first, and then we try to make enough money to just stay in business. But so we make traditional food. There are 11 businesses now. Wow. Zing Train, which teaches our business practices, is the only non-food related business.
You mean Zing Train is an actual business that people can buy the training for how to do business?
Yes, how we do business. So we just share. It's like open source. Zing Train became a business and I think around 1994, so long before people were talking about open source.
Yeah.
So we just share everything that we do, and it's like, you know, go for it. We, you know, if you could do it too, wonderful. Let's all try to do business this way, anyone who's interested. So we have a mail order business. We have a Zingerman's Creamery that makes fresh cheese and gelato. We have a coffee roasting business with a cafe. We have an event space, mainly weddings, but also corporate things, called Zingerman's Cornman Farm, Zingerman's Mail Order, which ships all of our food all over the country. So, and they make some of the things that they're shipping. Zingerman's Delicatessen, obviously. Oh, and I can't forget Zingerman's Roadhouse, which is an all-American restaurant that serves sort of traditional dishes from across the country.
Oh, fantastic.
So those are some of them.
Now, does that mean that each one of these businesses has an operating partner who essentially owns that part piece of the, owns their own operation? It's not run by some corporate team at the Zingerman's headquarters that's telling you all what to do.
Absolutely. Yes. None of us would tolerate.
It's not going to work for you 60s refugees, you know?
Exactly. No, I mean, actually, someone's daughter used to come to the bakery with them occasionally when she was about 7. And we'd give her a clipboard, and her nickname was Corporate. And we would go around and say, guys, watch out, Corporate's here.
Yeah, right. Anyway,
yeah, that was our version of Corporate. So yeah, there's a managing partner who's an owner in each one of the businesses. So someone who really is passionate about whatever the nature of the business is. And people own They own different amounts. Paul and Ari, the founders, own some of each one of the businesses. And for many of the businesses, were like really instrumental in, I just want to show you, there's a nice rack of pretzels. You probably can't quite see it. Bavarian twisted pretzels.
Can't see it. That was a great shot of, they were going into the oven, right? Those pretzels were rolled into a rotating rack oven. And now do those pretzels, they're Bavarian style, but do they get dipped in lye or anything like that before they bake?
Yeah, they sure do. They get dipped in lye. I'm going to see if I can give you a little closer picture of it rotating. And this is Joe.
Hey, Joe. And now we're seeing inside a rotating rack oven where the whole rack is going in loaded with Bavarian pretzels spinning around. Are you getting a little steam bath going in there? It's a blast of a steam. And they're going to bake and come out golden brown because of the lye.
Right. So another big part of a couple of big important things that are part of the whole Zingerman's world is that we have a central services that's not corporate. It's where IT, HR, marketing reside. And the whole idea was, as an artisan, as a baker, I might not know how to run a business, accounting, and we need help. And so Paul and Ari had the thought, we could provide this business support for people who want to focus on making bread or making pastry or making cheese, and let them make that, and then we can advise them and help them so that they can run a successful business.
It's like an intellectual commissary that provides the support for all the different spokes of the wheel, right?
I think you're the marketing genius, Peter. Yeah,
I wish I could actualize something the way that you guys did, because that's pretty, I mean, it makes so much sense. There are restaurant models like that, right? Lettuce Entertainment in Chicago, where they've got so many great chefs, each running their own show, but all tied at the hub to, you know, a great support team, a management team. It sounds like, does each entity, each business entity within the community have their own board of directors or advisors that report to a sort of an oversight board, or how is oversight handled?
Yeah, so I would say no. There's what we call the partners group, and that's all the owners, and we meet every 2 weeks. And even though there's very little cross ownership between the businesses, we collaborate on certain issues that we've defined as this group is going to make those decisions. So the partners group really governs the organization.
So to get into the partners group, you have to be one of the partners of your own, the business you're running.
Exactly.
And then they all kind of become, they share their accumulated wisdom with each other in what I would imagine could be sometimes very exciting brainstorming sessions.
Yes, or arguments.
Yes.
another thing that I want to share is that another important part of the whole Zingerman's thing, and I brought it up a little bit at the beginning, is giving opportunity to people. So many of the partners, fully now more than half of the partners, started as hourly employees at Zingerman's.
Wow.
And right now at the bakery, so I'm now a managing partner, but I made $8 an hour.
Yeah.
And I have a new partner who's worked at the bakery for most of the last 20 years, and he started as a 17-year-old working behind the counter in the shop. He was a delivery driver. So it really happens. You know, I say to people when we have a welcome to the bakehouse class, and I say, you know, you never know. You might think that you want to be an owner here someday. Watch what you wish for, because it could happen to you.
Well, that's the thing, is when you're young and in the beginning of something, it's hard to project 20 and 30 years down the road. But here you are 30 years down the road from when you started. Yeah. And you can look back and see it really can happen. If you hang in there contribute your energy and creativity to the project, you could ultimately be in a position of authority and responsibility and partnership. So how many partners within one entity, like how many partners within the bakehouse are there that can do those meetings, for instance?
There are two. Most of the businesses many have two. The delicatessen and Zingerman's mail order have three. A few have one. So it really just depends on how people want to do the work. We have another sort of interesting thing. I don't remember how many years ago it is now. I don't know if it's 8. We started having what we call a staff partner because we're making decisions for the organization at that level. And of course, we don't have all of the perspectives. We only have ours. And being a managing partner is a distinct, it's important, but it's certainly not an all-knowing perspective. So now we have 4 what we call staff partners that sit on the group and have a vote.
That's great.
We actually make decisions by consensus, but they're part of the consensus.
That's great.
And they're not shop stewards, but they're there to just broaden the perspective.
Yeah, and they get to bring in the perspective of what it's like for the working side, who are it's certainly in some ways it reminds me of that I'll call it the counterculture idea of the co-ops. You know, all the co-ops. Yeah. Right. Very few of which have survived to today, but the best of that aspect, where at least the people who are doing the work, the day-to-day frontline workers, you know, get to weigh in on and bring to the leaders what the needs are, what the concerns are. It could certainly keep the unions out.
I don't know about that. That's an interesting topic, but I'm not sure that will keep any. I mean, I think unionism is a movement now, and who knows?
It's coming back from big time, that's for sure.
Yes. You know, Peter, I'm sometimes accused of, like, people want to know, like, what are the bad things? You make it sound like everything is perfect. Well,
I know, it sounds like one big happy family.
No. So I just want to make it clear that, we got all the same issues that everybody else has.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in any given day, there's something that's not going right. And it's challenging sometimes to work in this model because you have all these entrepreneurs who are supposed to cooperate. Sometimes we're pretty independent. We don't want to cooperate. We want to do our own thing. Some people, I think the bakery, 4 or 5 former managers of our bread bakery have opened their own bakeries. They didn't want to be partners in Zingerman's. It was too much collaborating for them.
Some people have to run their own show. They just, by nature, they need to have their own thing.
Right, right.
And Zingerman's is a stepping stone for them to their own vision.
Yes, which is great, which I'm happy about. But I just say, you know, it's not for everybody. And there are things that are challenging in the model.
Well, there's no way to run a business without challenges. I mean, somebody once, when I had my bakery, somebody said, you know, the main job of the head of the company is to solve problems. That's your main job, and problems will come. So make sure that you budget time for that.
But it
sounds like you guys have, you know, well, you've had, this is the 30th year of the Bakehouse and 40 years basically of Zingerman's. So you guys have been navigating through all of these, you know, figuring it out.
We're constantly trying to figure it out. Absolutely, it's been a good run so far. And hopefully it will keep going. That's the goal.
Well, I want to hear a little bit before we run out of time completely. Number one, about you've told us a little bit about the old school apple pie. In the end, the pie looks like, what is it like? Is it just a big Dutch apple style pie, or is it a two crusted pie?
It's a two crusted pie, and it's Michigan apples. But the thing that was interesting about it was, trying to use unrendered lard, so real leaf lard that's never been rendered, as one of the fats, as the fat that was in the pie. So that's why it was called old school apple pie.
Ah, that's interesting. Thing, Zingerman is clearly not a kosher deli. We know that. not with all your great bacon. So, you know, being able to use lard and good, you know, leaf lard is for most pie bakers know that that's the best crust is made with leaf lard. So you're basically going for the gold standard of an apple pie.
Absolutely. That's it exactly. And I think that, you know, most of the things that I bring up and say, let's work on, they're not about doing something kind of, you know, which is wonderful, but new and mishmash of, you know, French and Japanese. It's more the traditional things or going back. Instead of innovating forward, innovating by looking back. So.
Yes.
That's kind of what I bring.
It's kind of a nostalgic experience of, you know, of the best of the past, not the worst of the best, but the best that we can recall, the best memories from our past brought into the present. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you can, that's a great business model in itself, because people want that. They want to be connected to the best memories that they have there, especially their food memories.
Right, exactly.
So tell me about the, what's this, the Buenos Aires brownies? Is that, yeah. That's another one I saw on the menu that I heard was yours.
Yeah. So one day I was at Zingerman's Deli and I was having a meeting with the marketing people. And Ari walked by and they said to Ari, this was in the early 2000s, Ari, that stuff in the fridge, that brown stuff, it was really good. And he said, oh, yeah, it's good, isn't it? And then he walked away. And I said to them, what was the brown stuff in the fridge that was really good? And it was dulce de leche.
Oh.
So we were just on a thing about making, Zingerman's mail order said, make us some different flavors of brownies. I've never been thrilled about making a million different brownies. You know, as a baker, making a brownie is not, the most elevated thing, as much as we can all enjoy eating them.
I love brownies, especially if you find one that you really love, then you don't want any other kind of brownie except that one.
Yes, it's true. But as making it was not, it's not why I became a baker, but whatever. So he said, well, maybe we could find a way to use that dulce de leche in a brownie. So that was a long time ago. Now we sell, and so there's a layer of brownie, layer of dulce de leche, layer of brownie, some demerara sugar on top.
Yeah.
And we sell literally tens of thousands of them in a year. And the bakers don't love me for it because it's a little bit of a process getting that dulce de leche at the right temperature, the brownie at the right temperature, so that everything just that you can actually build it.
But if it was easy and anybody could do it, then anybody would do it. But you have to have a place like Zingerman's where they are willing to put the extra mileage into to bring out something that's unique and original.
Have you been listening to me like on something? Because that's what I say.
No. But
yeah, I say it's exactly it. If someone else could do it, they wouldn't pay us to do it, you guys. So.
Well, I haven't listened to you, but I feel like you could be my sister, because you're talking my language, and I love having this conversation with you. So I want to thank you so much for sharing with us first of all the 30th anniversary of Zingerman's Bakehouse and for all your work there and for the work that everybody at Zingerman's is doing to kind of create models. I don't know how to say this, but maybe models that can be almost like heroes for other people that want to get into business and go, how can I do this? How can I succeed? Well, here's a model that works. Why don't you go take the Zing train,
Right, exactly. Well, thank you, Peter. And Peter, I want to thank you because you are a big model for bakers all over the country and definitely bakers here. I walked around this afternoon, checked in with people about whether they could be on the Zoom, whether they minded. And I said, you're going to do this podcast with Peter Reinhardt, and eyes wide open. Really? So thank you for all that you've done.
Well, as you know, Pizza Quest is mostly about pizza, but we always say that really pizza is just sort of the door opener for a bigger issue for us, which is the celebration of artisanship wherever we find it. And Zingerman's is almost an icon of within the artisan community of bringing out great products and also now, as I'm learning more and more, great business models for how to do a business in a not a new way, but in a way that works and is humane,
sustainable, humane, ethical,
ethical,
caring, loving. Yeah.
I guess ethical is really the key word in all this, I guess.
So
thank you. And please thank Ari and whoever else is, in the leadership team. And when you were talking about that leadership team, though, it made me wonder, is each business, I'll end with this question, is each business within the, for lack of a better word, constellation of the community of businesses, each one is responsible for their own success, financial success. The money's not pooled. Like if somebody's struggling here, the other businesses aren't responsible to bail them out. Everyone has to, each business has to make it on its own.
We try to make it on our own, but of course, if somebody has cash and someone else needs a loan, there are friendly loans. We cross promote each other. If a business like say the creamery was young and new, we would try to create items that use their cheese or their gelato to promote it. But basically, the finances are separate.
Well, that's good. It's like you say, it's a family. You guys are a family of businesses, and And so you help each other out. But
right.
Don't come begging for money to me if you're not cutting it. You can get your act together.
I'm sure. Fair enough. I'm sure it's a little warmer.
Some tough love is spoken at these meetings as well.
Well, we all share the same name. And so we want to make sure that the customer experience is really good at each one of the businesses. Yeah. And that the employee experience is really good at each one of the businesses. So there is conversation to help one another get better at what we're doing.
Well, that's it. Well, again, Amy Emmerling, thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing the Zingerman story, your story. And I will look forward. I'm going to look for any excuse I can to get out to Ann Arbor and get together with you in person. And
yes, please. You could teach a class. You could have a special dinner at the Roadhouse and promote your book. Come, join us.
I would love to. That sounds great. Okay. We just got to figure out a time and a place to get me out there. And maybe you and I can communicate by email and we'll see if I can get on your schedule for the class program.
That would be great. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right, everybody. And thank all of you for either watching or listening today to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt. Amy Emmerling's been with us. We'll see you on the next episode of Pizza Quest. Yay.
Pizza Quest with Peter Reinhardt is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.